مود لعب الفتاوتا
مع انه حارتنا خجوله ومش لابسه
حريره
عرس برا فرحه دورها للتجميل الزمن سبقها نسيها املها التفريق صار اسير راح يكسر قفص اخرته يحلق ويطير
كان بنيتي اثبتي وكان هرست مكبتي في مزل اخوكي ما يمشي الخاب انتو دي اني من اسال لبنوت بايت وماشي نبنى لي لمتا بدور امي وشي مرسي بمقرم شبو مالي
That is dumb. Born Here, Palestinian hip-hop group that's appeared in the show before, once before anyway, and hearing their sound is appropriate for this moment. Yuhok, join us here as we look at what's going on in Israel and Gaza at this moment. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner. Sorry, I missed that last tweet last hour, but we'll try to share some of that as well. 410-319-8888. And this half hour or so, we're going to talk about what is going on in Gaza. From the voices in Gaza itself, from a reporter in Israel looking at what's going on, from somebody who's part of the protest movement, the African-American community here around Gaza, will be joining us on the show as well. And we will be bringing you a debate on Israel and Gaza in the coming days here on the program between all sides in this conflict. But each day we take a different look and a different way of looking at this. And we are joined once again by Leah Tehrchensky, who is the Israel-Palestine correspondent for the Real News Network, where the Center for Emerging Media and the Steiner Show are moving their offices sometime over the next week or two. She's a filmmaker whose current project is called On the Side of the Road. It's a very powerful film that we'll be having her on to talk about here and hope to get that to Baltimore with her. The Reverend Dr. Heber Brown joins us. He's pastor at the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church here in Baltimore, community activist who took part in demonstrations here in Baltimore. Good to have you both with us.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate the opportunity.
And we are looking forward in a moment to talk also to Mohammed Suleiman, who is a Palestinian journalist from Gaza who works with the Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights in Gaza. We are trying to connect with him right now by phone. But you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Leah, let me start with you. And again, thanks for all the reporting you're doing. The very tough situation. We've been in touch with folks in Gaza and the West Bank and Israel a lot over the last week, at least I have been, just writing back and forth. And it was interesting. One of the pieces I read this morning early was, this is a large political question before you can tell us some of the latest news, is that this has to be more, the answer to this has to be more than just a ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinians in Gaza.
Yes, right.
I'm curious as to your thoughts on that idea.
Well, I have to remind your listeners that on the second day of the war, the Hamas party has proposed to Israel a ceasefire, a permanent ceasefire based on three very simple conditions. Obviously, the end of shooting, the end of the siege on the Gaza Strip, and the third one was the release of the recently rearrested political prisoners. Those prisoners were very publicly released in the Gilad Shalit deal just a year before, and Israel took advantage of its operation in the West Bank last month and rearrested them. So those three demands were brought to the table. Israel rejected that ceasefire, followed by 6 days of Israeli leaders saying in the press and in all kinds of conferences that Israel is not interested in the ceasefire until it brings Hamas to its knees. And then 8 days into the war, they proposed the Egyptian ceasefire proposal, which basically says just an end to firing and that's it, which, of course, the Hamas party rejected because Egypt and Israel are two governments very hostile to the Hamas party, and the ceasefire proposal was brought to the Hamas leadership just hours before it was supposed to go into effect in a sort of dirty political move that Hamas basically rejected. This led to a ground invasion and all the things that happened as a result. To this day, Hamas has again and again said that they're willing to sign a ceasefire as long as it includes either easing or lifting the 7-year-long blockade on the Gaza Strip that has led to very serious water and fuel shortages. Everything, of course, made a lot worse during this war. The cutting of electricity constantly in a regular time, not in war. Most Gazans have access to only 8 hours of electricity a day. Now it's about 3 to 4 hours of electricity a day, which, as you can imagine, during a war, when you have piling, piling numbers of wounded in hospitals and children being born, and 20% of pregnant women are giving birth prematurely, according to a story recently done by Jesse Rosenfeld, and those babies needing to be in incubators, which depend on electricity, leading to three babies dying as a result of not being able to be kept alive. There's all these complications as a result of the siege in a regular day in the Gaza Strip. Now during the war, everything's 100 times worse. So the Hamas party conditioning the ceasefire on either easing or lifting the siege is basically its statement that there's a reason why they're fighting this war. There's a reason why there are rockets being launched at Israel. On a more political level, without gaining anything politically from this war, it would be the end of the Hamas party, which was already on its last legs before the war started. So this is a war of survival for them.
And before we come back to Leah and talk about directly what's happening there as she sees it and is reporting it, and we're still hoping that we get Mohammed Suleiman on the air with us from Gaza, who we are trying to get a hold of by phone now, but we're going to keep trying. But I know there's problems with communications in Gaza, so it may be difficult. We'll turn to the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown from Baltimore here. And Heber, it's always good to have you with us. Before we open the phones, talk to us a bit about your picture is in the paper. Standing in the demonstration to end the war in Gaza. Talk a bit about why you've become involved in this and what it's saying to you here in this community.
Yeah. Well, first, Mark, I want to thank you for the opportunity, and I'm thankful as well for Leah's reporting, and I'm thankful for Mohammed as well. I pray that we're able to connect with him, because I spent the better part of an hour last night reading his articles and even his tweets. And with his unsettling honesty and attention to detail, he helped to humanize what actually was going on in Gaza for me. Oftentimes in American media, we don't hear the names of Palestinians who are killed by the Israeli military. We oftentimes don't even hear the mention of their families and their background, but Mohammed is powerful in his writing in that, and he really brought me to great pause last night. For me, Mark, I was blessed with the opportunity to be a part of a delegation to Palestine, Israel, with a group called Interfaith Peace Builders. I didn't go for tourism. I didn't go to see the quote-unquote Holy Land, as so many religious groups go to do. I went to find out for myself what was going on the ground, because I had a sneaky suspicion that what was coming across the TV, in particular in America, was not the whole story. And I was exactly right. I was blessed with the opportunity to meet with Palestinians and Israelis to hear directly from them what the root causes of this situation is all about. A lot of people like to talk about rockets, but I like to focus on roots. And at the root, it is, as Leah said a few moments ago, the siege and the occupation of Palestinians. The roots go back to the displacement of people from their land. And so, that was compelling enough for me to get involved. And then, Mark, when I saw the connections between the plight of Palestinians and the condition of black people here in the United States, I saw the relationship between the oppression of African Americans and the occupation of Palestinians, the tools, the methods, and even the spirit behind the merciless massacre of Palestinians is comparable, in my view, to the same vicious terrorism that black people face here in the United States. And one final point, I know you've got to move on, but one final point as well. As a Christian pastor, the Palestinian Christian community, with their Kairos document in 2009, asked us to do some specific things for the church community. And your listeners, I know many of them are church attenders and the like. But the Palestinian Christian community asked sister churches around the world not to offer a theological cover-up for the injustice that they suffer, the sin of occupation. And they asked to, you know, churches to get involved with boycott and divestment. And I'm so glad that so many denominations here in the U.S. have made great progress on that front.
Folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. And we're going to hear more directly about what's going on at this moment from Leah Tarachansky. Hopefully Mohammed Suleiman, if we can get through to him in Gaza. My producers are trying now to get through to Gaza. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Let's get a couple calls in here, then we'll come right back to Leah. And let's go to Michael first in Pikesville.
Being omitted here is it's not just a question of Israelis' merciless persecution of the Gazans. Because, first of all, that's a misnomer, because anyone can see that they give them due warning to get out of there, and they keep their children in there with them with the missiles. They protect their missiles with their own children, making them human shields. But what I want to say is that if you look at Hamas's charter, you see that it's much more than the so-called occupation, also a misnomer. Hamas's charter says they want to kill Jews everywhere, not just there. They have this merciless motive they make into a sacrament to slaughter the Jews. And this Uncle Jake, Mark Steiner, who cozies up to the enemy when he purports to be a Jew,
thanks for the attack. I appreciate it. But, you know, we always get attacked when we stand up for human rights. That's nothing new, nothing I'm not used to. But Leah Terechets, Leah, let me kind of deal with some of the points that that were raised by Michael here, because you hear often. Let's talk about the three things he said: the Hamas people as human shields, the question of the Hamas charter, and the question of the warning. Let's start with the warning.
Yeah. So first of all, I think that people really need to read the charter, and they really need to read it in Arabic before they're commenting on it. The point that is always brought forward by the Hamas charter is that they claim that all of the state of Israel, all the territory of the state of Israel and all of the occupied territories is Palestine, and they claim that they want autonomy over all of Palestine, and that is often being interpreted as they don't want Israelis or Jews on that land, which is not true. In our interview with the Hamas leaders in 2010, they were very clear about what they actually want. And I want to bring to your attention that the charter of the Likud party, which is the party of the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, also says that all of the territory on which Israel currently exists, including the Palestinian occupied territories, half of Jordan and half of Lebanon, is historical Israel that belongs to the Jewish people. So there's a lot of inciting language in all kinds of political documents on every side of this. And as far as the human shields thing is concerned, you know, the BBC journalist Jim Bauer the other day wrote a very important piece. He's been reporting out of Gaza since 1990, and he has been in and out of the Gaza Strip for 30 years. And he wrote, "I did not see any evidence of the Hamas fighters using people as human shields." You have to remember that the Gaza Strip is home to almost 2 million people. Those 2 million people are locked inside of a strip that's 45 kilometers long. In a strip that small, with so many people, if you're going to be hiding roughly 9,000 rockets, which is what the Israeli estimate is of the Hamas arsenal, you inevitably are going to be no more than within a few meters of civilians. Now, Israel, in the last 21 days, has killed 1,035 people. Of them, according to Physicians for Human Rights, 82% are civilians. Now, the Israeli government is constantly arguing that we are currently in the midst of a surgical operation, et cetera, et cetera. In the Israeli press, you're hearing constantly that if anyone who is killed is not a combatant, then, you know, it's an anomaly or it's the fault of the Hamas party. But if we cannot wage a war in a way where 82% of the killed are not civilians, we don't have a right to wage a war. In the beginning of the 20th century, the vast majority of casualties of war were combatants. On the Israeli side, 46 people have died in this war. Out of the 46, 93%, 43 people are combatants, soldiers in combat. When you're waging a war, soldiers get killed. But if you're waging a war where 82% of the casualties are civilians, and then the leaders of our country, the leaders of Israel, are going on every major news source saying that the casualties are the fault of the party that they come from, it's a kind of ridiculous logical argument that is very disappointing to hear people abroad repeat verbatim without actually thinking about. How can you blame the civilians that have been sitting under siege for 7 years? Most of them are not allowed to leave the Gaza Strip, both by the Egyptian and Israeli government, of supporting a party that is fighting Israel, when they see that party as the only group trying to defend them from continuous ongoing Israeli bombardments. This war that just started 21 days ago is not the first time Israel bombed Gaza. As a journalist living here and as an Israeli, I can tell you, Israel bombs Gaza more or less every week. People are constantly being killed there, and it's just not on the news anymore. now that it has led to a full-blown war and Hamas is responding with rockets and the whole shebang, you have, you know, reporters like me and you writing about it every day, and you have world attention being paid to it and finally being paid to the siege. But on the regular day, Israel bombs Gaza anyway, and no one even talks about that. So yes, when some party comes around, even though I don't agree with Hamas, I don't agree with their charter, and I think that their internal political positions are very detrimental to the people of Gaza, let alone their foreign policy. Still, they are perceived by the Palestinians as at least someone trying to defend them against ongoing and relentless bombardment.
Let me just say that the two things before we go back to the phones and return to the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown is we've been in touch with Mohammed Suleiman from Gaza. Something's happening there right now. He will be joining us in about 10 minutes or less for this conversation, and we'll find out what's happening after he joins us. And let me just say before we go to our next caller and bring in the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown back in the conversation, because I think it's only fair to our listeners who may not know the language, what was just being used earlier with the previous caller. Once he called me an Uncle Jake, that was like calling somebody an Uncle Tom. But what it really means is that for somebody like me, and I'll just put it out there for all our listeners, and you can bring your comments, agree or disagree, at 410-319-8888. As someone who grew up in a home in a family of Holocaust victims and grew up in a home of people who were tortured and killed during the pogroms, as someone who grew up in a home that was a Zionist home that believed that Zionism was a notion of liberation from the oppression that Jews felt, and then you had your eyes opened, partially because of your civil rights work, partially of your work in living in the black community, and then coming into seeing what happened after the war in 67 when I volunteered to join the Israeli army to fight. Then you see for yourself what happens when you meet Palestinians and you meet Arab Americans and you see what's really going on. You realize what we have become. You can't let that happen. You have to speak up. So if that makes me an Uncle Jake, then I'll be Jake Steiner. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Ricardo. You're on the air.
You touched on one thing that I did want to say as far as the Israelis being the people that were supposed to have been persecuted by Hitler. And you would think that these people would have a clear understanding or know, you know, to treat people in that manner. I mean, sometimes I kind of wonder, you know, after going through what the Jewish people supposedly went through, and then, you know, to see the condition of the Palestinian people being put in that little space of land, and then you hear them say stuff like, well, we drop leaflets down and tell them to get out of there. Where are they going to go, man? Where are they going to go? They have nowhere to go. And, you know, it's amazing the propaganda that they use to, you know, to do these things, and it's a sad case. And if they are really the Jewish people, the people of God, then that particular God, I truly would want to serve. Because that it's just a sad, sad day when you see children and women and people dying like this. And, you know, and they talk about the rockets that's coming from Hamas. Hamas was a creation of them, like we created Al-Qaeda. They created them.
Okay. Well, Ricardo, we now have Mohammed Suleiman, who's joined us from Gaza. We're going to go to him and then go to Reverend Heber Brown. But let me just say quickly, Mohammed, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
And I think that, you know, Heber, before we turn to Mohammed, one of the things that it struck me that it doesn't take much in the annals of human history for the oppressed to become an oppressor. That switches in human history. It doesn't mean that we put up with it or accept it, but I think that's not an uncommon thing.
It's definitely not. I mean, we've seen it a number of ways, and particularly in this particular instance, you know, when I think about the last caller, and I think about your comments too, Mark, and I really appreciate you sharing more of your story, because in my experience since I got active on this issue, I've seen many Jewish Americans and many Israelis speak up and say, this cannot be done in our name. This is not Judaism. This is not the essence of what we believe. And I appreciate and I understand the courageous voices in the Jewish community who are speaking up, from the head of Jewish Voices for Peace, who was arrested last week in New York, I believe, to even local Jews in Baltimore area who are speaking up as well. I appreciate that. And this Wednesday, at Penn Station at 5:30. There's another rally, Baltimore for Gaza, and really people calling for justice. Penn Station this Wednesday at 5:30 to be a part of that.
So, Mohammed Salamina, glad you could join us. Thank you so much for being with us here. Who is a human rights worker in Gaza. So can you give us the latest of what's been going on even today that we don't know about?
Yeah, I mean, recently we've been hearing a lot of, news about an impending ceasefire. But just now there was an airstrike that targeted Gaza's main hospital, Al-Shifa Hospital. And I'm not sure if there has been any deaths or injuries, but is to say that although Israel claims that it has agreed to extend the ceasefire, it has actually violated it just now and bombed Gaza's main hospital. So what I'm trying to say is that the bombing hasn't stopped, the shelling hasn't stopped Israeli unmanned drones, warships, and artillery continue to fire shells and bombard the Gaza Strip. The death toll is, dramatically rising. We're now talking about over 1,000 deaths, and the majority of whom are civilians. The situation in Gaza is pretty scary. No one would love to be in Gaza at the moment. It's really dangerous to go outside now. You could be a target for an Israeli missile. We believe that anyone in Gaza is a target for the Israeli war machine. So, it's just so beyond comprehension what is happening in Gaza. You know, we see little children torn to pieces, disemboweled. So, you know, the agony and the pain of the Palestinians has become just so massive and beyond comprehension, really.
And I think that it's important to hear your voice in this, Mohammed, because I think that you don't, when we produced our series on the war in Vietnam years back, we had soldiers talking about, especially one talking about what it was like to be in the midst of war, because unless you're in it, you don't understand what it's like. And you're talking about what's happening on the ground now is critical for people to hear to understand what the panic and pain and fear is like among regular citizens of Palestinians, just regular everyday human beings trying to live their lives. And have nowhere to go. You have nowhere to go.
I have nowhere to go, yeah. I'm just staying at home at the moment. I'm thinking of doing some basic stuff, and which I can't really do. For example, just 1 week ago, there was a strike which hit just so close to my home. And I had to leave my house because of the strike. A few windows were blown out. I went to the north of Gaza where my family lives. I spent a few days there. And then in the north of Gaza, there was also intense bombing, and Israeli forces warned residents of the north of Gaza to leave their homes because, you know, they said that they're going to intensify their attacks and, extend the military operation. So my family and I moved again to Gaza City, where my brother lives. So we're trapped. Basically, we're trapped. We have nowhere to go. Israel warns us to leave our houses, but it doesn't give us an option to a safe haven to go to. And we have seen families, like thousands of families, who decided to go to UN schools and seek shelter there. But even there, one of the schools in Beit Hanun, which was turned into a makeshift shelter, was bombed and 16 civilians were killed. So even in UN schools, civilians could be a target. Basically, we're trapped in Gaza. We're trapped between two deaths, death by Israeli bombs and missiles and death by the Israeli blockade. So this is just sort of trying to bomb the Palestinians in Gaza into submission. And I have no words to describe the situation for anyone. Like, you know, one has to be really in Gaza to understand what it means to be living in Gaza under Israeli bombs.
We're going to take a very brief break, and I'm asking my guests to stay with us just a little bit longer. And we have with us Mohammed Salamin, who is a human rights worker from Gaza, Leah Terechansky, Israel-Palestine correspondent for the Real News Network. Her documentary film is called On the Side of the Road, which we'll be talking about more in the coming months. The Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, pastor at the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church here in Baltimore, and community activist. 410-319-8888. We'll come right back to Leah Terechansky and Rhonda and Ernest, who are callers on the phone, before we start our next segment on Appalachia. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. We are looking at the latest that's happening in Gaza and the war between in Gaza, and the Israeli war in Gaza right now. We are here with Leah Tarachansky, who is Israel policy correspondent for the Real News Network, Mohammed Suleiman, a human rights worker in Gaza, the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, pastor of Pleasant Hill Baptist Church, and you at 410-319-8888. We'll get to these calls coming in, and we do want to hear them all. Somebody who's upset about the way this conversation is going, we'll hear what they have to say. But Leah, let me talk about what's going on from inside Israel and politically reporting on where is the conversation shifting at all in Israel about the war and how it's being conducted and whether it should end.
Yeah, so usually in previous wars, our experience was that when Israeli soldiers start dying and the public opinion shifts against the war, the more soldiers die, the more intensely pressure rises against the leadership to pull out of the war and to end it quickly. I have to explain to your listeners that the Israeli army is perceived in Israel as the strongest national symbol, as the biggest uniting point of Israeli society. Our soldiers are perceived both as our boys, because everybody in Israel, men and women, everybody has to serve. All the Jewish citizens have to serve. And also it's seen as Israel's survival, in the Middle East. And so the army, being against the war means being against the army. That's how it's perceived in Israel. And being against the war, being against the army, is perceived as treason. Now, here in this war, what we've seen is we've lost more soldiers than we have in every war in the last decade. And yet, with every passing day, support for the war increases. And instead of asking for a ceasefire, most people are asking for a stronger attack on Gaza and a bigger hit to the Hamas party. Now, on the streets, we've also seen a growing anti-war movement. It started out with just a few dozens on the streets in Yaffa. It grew to a few hundreds in Tel Aviv, and on Saturday night there was a protest with almost 7,000 people. And every time that there's an anti-war demonstration, there's also a big demonstration of pro-war and neo-fascist groups standing against it. And those groups, while the anti-war demonstration chants things like, in Gaza and in Sderot, children just want to live, and the war, lift the siege, things like that, the pro-war and the neo-fascist groups chant death to all the Arabs. Tomorrow there's no school in Gaza because all their children are dead. And anyone who opposes the war is a traitor. Kill all the traitors, kill all the leftists, and so on. Very inciting, very violent messages. Now, in the first few weeks, it was just chanting. Now we're seeing that there's a huge mobilization online of extreme right-wing nationalists who are trying to identify on social media anybody who opposes the war. They attack them. They call their employers to get them fired. There's been a number of people that were fired as a result of posting things against the war or pro-Palestinian things online. And they are now also being very violent towards leftists, trying to beat them at every demonstration. On Saturday night, after people left the anti-war demonstration and went home, mobs of raging neo-fascists followed them to their houses and beat them. One guy, a bystander, came up to him and hit him with his crutch and cracked his skull. I witnessed a soldier in uniform coming up to a group of anti-war demonstrators and pepper spraying them. When the police saw him, they gave him a high five and let him go. So we're seeing here a total unity in the Israeli population with the war, and anyone who opposes it, which, even if you get thousands of people on the streets, is still a very marginal proportion of the society. Anyone who opposes the war is now afraid of posting on social media, afraid of expressing their opinions at war, afraid of being caught on the street with people who come from this camp and can easily beat them, and the police is doing nothing.
Let me go to the phones here, and then we only have like 5 or 6 minutes left in this segment, and I do want to get our guests back on both, hear more from Mohammed Suleiman and the Reverend Heber Brown as well. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Judy first. Judy, you're on the air.
Thank you so much. Thank you for giving airtime to this important topic. 2 points. One question to you, Mr. Steiner. It seems to me that all of your panelists are very, very clearly taking the position of the Gaza, you know, the individuals in Gaza and only that perspective. How come I don't hear anybody on the panel that's representing the Israeli Defense Forces?
Well, actually, I've been away, and it was my decision to do that when I was asked by my producers what to do. So we want you to hear voices from Gaza that you don't hear on very many media in this country at all. Over the last 21 years of this program, we've always been covering Israel and Palestine in a very intense way and a very balanced way for the whole time of this program, and we'll continue that. We plan to have that debate coming on the air again this week and hear more voices from Israel as well during the course of the week. On our website, you'll also hear this Voices of the Holy Land series that we produced over a three-year period where every side, from the extreme right to the extreme left, Palestinians and Israelis, all were heard on this program. But we wanted to hear Gazan voices today because you don't hear Gazan voices. That is what I did, and that's what we're doing today. And what's your second point?
Yes, well, just in follow-up to that point, it would seem to me that for the sake of fair journalism, that at least it should be noted that this program today is only representing or primarily representing the one viewpoint, you know, and that perhaps you will be getting it for the second segment at a later point. My second point is that just a brief moment, I do have close relatives that are in the Israeli army that are very involved in the Israeli scene there. If you read any of the Israeli news sources, such as the Arutz Sheva website, it is absolutely astounding the amount of warnings that Israel has been giving the Palestinian people. Helicopters flying, putting leaflets down saying, people, evacuate this area. 24 hours from now, it's going to be bombed. Another warning. In addition to that, before a house would, if there was considered to be a suspect terrorist in a particular home, Israel will come and has some sort of device connected, I believe, to an airplane that sort of knocks on the roof of the house to give an additional warning. We mean it. Move away. Don't be in harm's way. And the
Mark,
let me let her finish, and then you can come right back in. Mohammed, you can come right back in. Go ahead. Finish what you were saying, Judy, then we'll go back to our guest. Judy, you still there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. In addition to that, if one inquires into it, why are there reports of hospitals and schools being bombed? Because the Hamas government or organization is using these facilities as human shields and is, in fact, from what I understand, telling its inhabitants, don't listen to the Israelis. When they tell you to get out of the area, stay there, be a martyr. And in addition, and my final point is that, again, and I request anybody to find evidence to the contrary, Israel has set up tents with doctors treating Palestinian people that are still not listening to these warnings and are casualties. Israel will be there treating these victims as it continues to treat other Palestinian and Arab citizens in its hospitals. Thank you.
Judy, thank you. I wanted to let you have your thought out. Mohammed, I heard you trying to break in. Please come in and say what you're about to say because we do have to take a break very shortly. Mohammed?
Yes.
Did you want to respond to what you heard?
Yeah, of course. First, I would like to say that the Israeli claims that they are warning Palestinian civilians to, stay away from Hamas militants are just completely ridiculous. Because basically, when Israeli warplanes dropped leaflets on the north of Gaza district as well as the east of Gaza district, they have warned nearly 500,000 people to leave their houses because 250,000 people live in the north of Gaza. 250,000 people live in east of Gaza. So Israel is basically asking 500,000 people to leave their houses. This is in a place that is populated by nearly 2 million people. So Israel is warning civilians. This is true, but this is completely impractical and unrealistic. Israel is doing this in order to deceive the world that it is actually trying to avoid civilian deaths. So this is number one. Number two, when Israel says that Palestinian civilians have to stay away from Hamas militants, at the same time it is not giving them a safe shelter. So I'll give you one example. There was a family, Al-Kailani family, which lives in the north of Gaza district. So after they heard Israeli warnings to evacuate, to the center of Gaza City. They heeded Israeli warnings. They went to Gaza City. They hired a flat in Gaza City. They stayed in that flat. And what happened is Israel killed them there. Israeli warplanes targeted the building that they were living in Gaza City, and they were killed in Gaza City, which Israel told them to go to. So basically, there is no safe place in Gaza. All Israeli claims that, you know, we are warning civilians are unfounded. They are ridiculous. When Israel, for example, dropped fires what it calls warning missiles on buildings, these warning missiles are lethal. They are deadly. They have killed too many people. We know the story of three children from Shaheber family who were feeding their chickens and pigeons on the roof when Israel fired a missile on the building. So it killed all three children who were on their building. So we know the story of the four children from Bakr family who were playing on the beach when Israeli warships fired a missile and killed two of them. Then they ran away for their lives. Israel shot another missile and killed them. So what we see from numbers, from facts on the ground, is that Israel is deliberately targeting civilians. If not deliberately, then it is using disproportionate force and indiscriminate attacks against the Palestinians. In Ash-Shuja'iyya, where in one night, more than 100 people were killed, Israeli artillery indiscriminately shelled and fired its shells toward the entire area. It displaced nearly 100,000 people. For example, in UN schools, which are now makeshift shelters for families, there was an attack at the school which killed 16 civilians. Four or five of them are children. So how can we talk about Israel warning Palestinian civilians to stay away from Hamas militants, while at the same time it is actually going for them? It is actually targeting them. So from facts, from numbers, we can just clearly debunk these Israeli claims which have nothing to do with reality.
Mohammed, thank you so much.
I just want to add something.
Leah, we only have like 10 seconds literally because we have to move on to our next segment. But go ahead, Leah, you can close us out.
Sorry, I really resent your listener's comment that because I oppose an unjust, brutal war, I am somehow anti-Israeli. I'm an Israeli. I live here. I get rocketed as the same as your relatives. And I'm sorry, but supporting a blind war that our three hospitals are destroyed, 12 clinics are targeted, more than 1,000 people are...
How many Israeli civilians were killed? This is the question. How many Israeli civilians were killed? These two civilians who were killed are regrettable. I'm sorry for their death. We've talking about over 1,000 Palestinian civilians. How can you compare between Israeli violence and Palestinian violence? There is no way to compare between the oppressive violence and the oppressed violence.
Okay,
Israel is obviously accountable for what is happening.
Exactly. And supporting this war is not being pro-Israeli. America allowing this war to go on and more than 1,000 people getting killed is not being pro the citizens of Israel.
So I'm sorry we do have to take a break here. This has been a very intense and interesting and important conversation. The Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, I'm sorry we couldn't get back to you just last moment. Thank you so much for being here. And we'll see you all on Wednesday at the demonstration at where was that again?
Penn Station this Wednesday at 5:30.
Mohammed Suleiman, stay safe. Human rights worker from Gaza, thanks so much for joining us. You and your family, be safe. Leah Terechansky, Israel-Palestine correspondent for Real News Network. Thank you once again for helping us with this program.
Thanks for having me.
Good to talk to you all, and we're going to take a brief break, and we turn our attentions to a part of America that is changing itself. Stay with us.